But can Clive's beautiful playing and singing, his masterly conducting, his powers of improvisation, be adequately characterized as skills or procedure? For his playing is infused with intelligence and feeling, with a sensitive attunement to the musical structure, the composer's style and mind. Can any artistic or creative performance of this caliber be adequately explained by procedural memory? Episodic or explicit memory, we know, develops relatively late in childhood and is dependent on a complex brain system involving the hippocampi and temporal lobe structures, the system that is compromised in severe amnesiacs and all but obliterated in Clive. The basis of procedural or implicit memory is less easy to define, but it certainly involves larger and more primitive parts of the brain, subcortical structures like the basal ganglia and cerebellum, and their many connections to each other and to the cerebral cortex. The size and variety of these systems guarantees the robustness of procedural memory and the fact that, unlike episodic memory, procedural memory can remain largely intact, even in the face of extensive damage to the hippocampi and cerebral cortex. Episodic memory depends on the perception of particular and often unique events, and one's memories of such events, like one's original perception of them, are not only highly individual, coloured by one's interests, concerns, and values, but prone to be revised or recategorized every time they are recalled. This is in fundamental contrast to procedural memory, where it is all important that the remembering be literal, exact, and reproducible. Repetition and rehearsal, timing and sequence, are of the essence here. Rodolfo Linus, the neurophysiologist, uses the term fixed action patterns, FAPs, for such procedural memories. Some of these may be present even before birth. Fetal horses, for example, may gallop in the womb. Much of the early motor development of the child depends on learning and refining such procedures through play, imitation, trial and error, and incessant rehearsal. All of these start to develop long before the child can call on any explicit or episodic memories. Is the concept of fixed action patterns any more illuminating than that of procedural memories in relation to the enormously complex creative performances of a professional musician? In his book Eye of the Vortex, Linus writes, "When a soloist, such as Jascha Heifetz, plays with a symphony orchestra accompanying him, by convention, the concerto is played purely from memory. Such playing implies that this highly specific motor pattern is stored somewhere and subsequently released at the time the curtain goes up. But for a performer, Linus writes, it is not sufficient to have implicit memory only. One must have explicit memory as well. Without intact, explicit memory, Jascha Heifetz would not remember from day to day which piece he had chosen to work on previously, or that he had ever worked on that piece before. Nor would he recall what he had accomplished the day before, or, by analysis of past experience, what particular problems in execution should be a focus of today's practice session. In fact, it would not occur to him to have a practice session at all. Without close direction from someone else, he would be effectively incapable of undertaking the process of learning any new piece, irrespective of his considerable technical skills. This, too, is very much the case with Clive, who, for all his musical powers, needs close direction from others. He needs someone to put the music before him, to get him into action, and to make sure that he learns and practices new pieces. What is the relationship of action patterns and procedural memories, which are associated with relatively primitive portions of the nervous system, to consciousness and sensibility, which depend on the cerebral cortex? Practice involves conscious application, monitoring what one is doing, bringing all one's intelligence and sensibility and values to bear, even though what is so painfully and consciously acquired may then become automatic, coded in motor patterns at a subcortical level. Each time Clive sings or plays the piano or conducts a choir, automatism comes to his aid. But what comes out in an artistic or creative performance, though it depends on automatisms, is anything but automatic. The actual performance reanimates him, engages him as a creative person. It becomes fresh and alive, and perhaps contains new improvisations or innovations. Once Clive starts playing, his momentum, as Deborah writes, will keep him and keep the piece going. Deborah, herself a musician, expresses this very precisely. The momentum of the music carried Clive from bar to bar. Within the structure of the piece, he was held, as if the staves were tramlines and there was only one way to go. He knew exactly where he was because in every phrase there is context implied by rhythm, key, melody. It was marvellous to be free. When the music stopped, Clive fell through to the lost place, but for those moments he was playing, he seemed normal.